Well, this is the season for family, festivity, and food. Tons of food, as a matter of fact. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. We're talking about how you can nourish your body while still enjoying the holiday season. And back with us, Beth Olson. In the studio with me, she's an associate professor and extension specialist in nutritional sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She specializes in nutrition education. Always fun to have her come by, and certainly I hope you'll join in with your own questions and comments as we move along today. So what's your holiday health routine? Do you enjoy maybe extra sweets, maybe a little more food in November and December? Join the conversation. You can call us at 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Beth, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Good to be here. Thank you.
So there are probably a few myths out there when it comes to the holidays and being healthy.
Yeah, there sure are. I think the one I found most surprising, perhaps, because I'd heard it for so long, is how much weight we gain over the holidays. So at some point, I actually dove into the literature and looked, and that isn't true. Certainly not everybody gains weight, but even those that do, it's a relatively small amount. Now, of course, if you celebrate a lot of holidays or there's other times where you're gaining weight, I suppose over the years that could add up. But I think it's a myth that you gain something like 5 or 10 pounds.
Well, I was thinking about Halloween recently. I normally have about 120 kids come by. And so I buy accordingly. And this year, I think I had 25.
Oh, no. So you had a lot of extra candy staring at you.
I had a lot of extra candy staring at me, and I got rid of a lot of it, but I'm sure I ate more Snickers bars, little ones, than I...
Well, and the little ones are the ones that can get you, because you think, well, it's pretty little, and then you have 5 or 6, and maybe it wasn't so little.
So there is a weight gain. What are the consequences of that to our health?
Well, if you're not gaining much, I think, you know, if you just pay attention and you're watching what you're eating and exercising, then you should be fine. But I think if we get casual about it, and over the years the weight accumulates, it can be harder to lose, of course, and it does set you up for some risk of some chronic diseases like heart disease, certain cancers, diabetes.
And, you know, during the holidays, you know, you look at food, it's a social activity, part of our tradition. With that in mind, do we need to be, or how should we, let me put it this way, how should we think about eating during this time of the year?
Yes, you're right. It's very social. And we shouldn't go into it thinking, well, I'm just not going to have any of these certain foods because I don't think they're healthy, even though they're a big part of your traditions or your culture. So what I'd suggest is maintaining as much as you can your normal routines. So if you normally breakfast, don't skip it thinking, well, I'm going to the office party later today and I'm going to eat, so I eat too much, so I won't eat breakfast. Don't do that. Or you're going to something in the evening. Don't think, well, I'll skip supper. I normally have supper at 5 or 6, but I'll skip it because I'm going to eat at this party. Because all you're likely to do is to eat too much of foods that aren't quite as healthy. So if you can maintain that, along with if you're active at all, if you can try to keep that up, it can be hard when you're busy with the holidays. But even walking, the other thing you might pay attention to is sleep. Don't become sleep deprived. All those things also affect your health.
So nutrient-dense foods, that's something I think we can get away from.
Exactly, yes. So those are the ones, you know, you want to make sure, especially in your regular meals, you're getting, so that you don't have to worry, I'm going to this party and I've got to look for, you know, something rich in vitamins and minerals. That's probably not going to appear. So lots of your fruits and vegetables, your whole grains, lean proteins, put those into your day. And if you do that, then you might be able to afford the Christmas cookie or or other treat that you're going to have later.
Yeah, yeah. And as you were talking, I was thinking, you know, it's not only the normal holidays, November and December, but now we also have February to think about, too. In addition to Valentine's Day, it's Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, and, you know, the same thing there. You know, try to eat your healthy meals, and then, you know, you can afford the brat or hot dogs or chips. On the one time you're going to, you know, the friend's house for the Super Bowl party.
Well, you do recommend against, talk about more about why you recommend against skipping meals, not skipping meals.
Yeah, so people who eat regular meals, that's associated with keeping a healthy weight. And so taking those meals out doesn't tend to just take those calories away. People tend to replace them somewhere else. In general, not always, but in general, breakfast can be pretty healthy. A lot of people have cereals or oatmeal or toast, juice, fruit. And what they're likely to replace that with later in the day probably isn't as healthy. We also find that people who are skipping meals they would normally eat early in the day start to eat later at night. So they get hungry after dinner, 8, 9 at night, and they begin to eat things that, you know, usually aren't cereal and fruit. It's more likely to be the things like chips.
Or that Snickers bar.
Yeah, or the Snickers bar.
Those became sort of my dessert, some of them. I thought, okay, well, I can't just sit here and snack on those. I've got to work a few into the formula here, and maybe the best way to do it is to have that as a dessert.
Yeah, that's a great idea, actually. You know, taking little habits or crutches and using those. So saying, you know, I really would like that candy bar, but, you know, mid-afternoon, maybe I can have an apple. And then after I have dinner, when I maybe would normally have a little sweet, I'll go ahead and have the Snickers bar.
Beth Olson, our guest, associate professor, extension specialist in the Department of Nutritional Sciences at UW-Madison. Our guest as we talk about food during the holiday season. What do you do during the holidays to kind of help yourself get through all of the food that we'll be looking at on Thanksgiving Day, for example? Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. If you Google staying healthy during the holidays, which we've done, a lot of websites suggest switching to things like light sour cream or sugar-free sweets. What do you think about food products that are meant to have less fat or sugar?
Well, of course, if you're going somewhere, you know, that might not be an option that would rely on your host. If you're making something yourself, you might be able to trade out an ingredient. Or if you're just, you know, topping your baked potato, you might be able to use a lighter sour cream and have less calories. It doesn't always help people cut back calories. Sometimes people use those products and then they end up compensating somewhere else. So, you know, it's kind of the old classic of the person with their chips and a diet soda. So they've taken some sugar out of one place, but then they've thought, well, I did that. I can afford to have this other snack. So, you know, as nutritionists, we tend to push people towards or suggest using whole foods and not worrying as much about things like artificial sweeteners or fat replacers. So things like fruits and vegetables. And then if you get enough of those, the occasional full fat or full sugar treat, you know, isn't going to hurt you.
I tell you, I don't like a lot of, I find the full sour cream or the actual, not, you know, without the calories taken out, I find them more satisfying.
Yeah, fat's very, has a very good mouth feel, which gets to be hard to mimic. So in addition to how it might taste, how it feels, and other fats are the same way. And fat empties a little slower out of your stomach, so it can also make you feel full longer. But a lot of it is just what you're used to. So if you're used to full fat, the lesser varieties might not be as satisfying to you.
Well, they aren't to me for the most part. And so I'll use butter and I will use full sour cream or whatever it might be. And I actually find it tastes better to me. And I probably don't use as much as when I have something that's fat-free or reduced or whatever, I tend to wind up using more.
Yeah, you might be doing that because your body is perceiving, you know, that it's not getting everything. Or sometimes it's subconscious. Again, we think, well, it's fat-free, it's sugar-free, I can have more of it. Without even realizing it, we sometimes do these things.
Yeah. And one other, well, I'll tell you what, we're coming up to the top of the hour here. Beth Olson is our guest today, extension specialist in the Department of Nutritional Sciences at the UW-Madison. We're talking food and nutrition with her. Questions, I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us. The email address, ideas@wpr.org. We are going to take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And then we'll be back with Beth Olson. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're taking a look at healthy eating. We focused a bit on the holiday season, but we can talk healthy eating, whether it be a holiday or not, with our guest Beth Olson, associate professor and extension specialist in the Department of Nutritional Sciences at UW-Madison. Great to have her with us. So tell us how you nourish your body during the season, the holiday season. What fuels you or keeps you going during busy days? Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234. You can email to ideas@wpr.org. Tiffany emailed us. She's been playing around with intermittent fasting. She puts in 16:8. I don't know exactly what that means, but for calorie control and blood sugar management, and was wondering how you feel about that. So what did she mean by that 16:8?
Well, for calorie control, if someone's interested in weight loss, I don't think that they've shown that intermittent fasting is any better than other methods to restrict one's calories. Often what there's different varieties of ways that people approach this. Generally, it just means between some certain hours in the day you can eat, and often it's eat whatever you like. It's not prescribing a diet. And then the rest of the hours you fast, you don't eat. For some people, that works better because they just are told. They don't have to make a decision about what to eat in the evening or whether they should have a cookie or a cracker or a piece of fruit. They just know it's this time I don't eat or it's this time I can eat. For some people, I believe it helps them control their blood sugar. So this is people who are, maybe they have type 2 diabetes or they have some other type of metabolic problem where they're just not handling carbohydrates well and restricting the amount of time that their body has to deal with those carbohydrates may be helpful. Certainly something I would, if one were going to do and you had type 2 diabetes, talk to your doctor about it to make sure you're doing it in a healthy way.
And I guess Jill was letting me know that the 16 meant 16 hours of fasting and eight hours when they could eat. So that makes
sense. Yeah, and some people do even, 6 hours. Some people do a fasting program where they restrict calories one day and then the next day they just eat what they would like and then they restrict the next day. So there's a lot of different ways. They work better for some people than others. in terms of weight loss, they haven't, I think, been shown to be any more effective than any other way of cutting back your calories.
Hmm. Darren emailed and wonders if eating before bed is bad for you. He's eaten his biggest meal of the day before bed for years. He's not overweight. Blood tests are always good. He does have type 2 diabetes, but it's well controlled. And he's 55 years old.
Yeah, well, you know, it's hard to argue if someone's doing something and it's working for them. For someone who's just looking at what they should do in general, we usually don't recommend eating before a large meal before bed. One big reason is when people lay down, if their stomach is full, they're a little more likely to get some kind of heartburn because they're laying down and food moves up, you know, into their esophagus. And over time, that can cause problems. So usually we like people to eat a little earlier, be upright for a while. There is a tendency for people who eat a lot of their calories late in the day to not eat as healthy of the calories, you know, in part because it's hard to pack all the healthy stuff in just perhaps one big meal. So in general, we try to tell people to eat regular meals.
I had another question. Oh, water comes to mind. I thought about water when I was thinking about fasting, but how much water should we aim to drink in a day? And I'm wondering if I'm fasting for 16 hours, is water going to help me get through that?
Well, it probably would. And, you know, normally if you would be eating more hours, not fasting, you would be drinking something with your meal. There'd be water in your food. So you want to make sure to have water when you're fasting because you would have otherwise. So you want to make sure to do that. We used to, years ago, someone said 8 glasses of water a day. And in recent years, we've gone away from that because it's turned out, for one thing, everybody's water needs are different. Some people are bigger people. Some people sweat more. They exercise. They need more water. The other is some people drink, you know, some coffee in the morning. Maybe they have some juice, water later in the day. And they, you know, you eat something like watermelon, it's large percentage of that is water. So the guidance for most people is drink to thirst. If you're thirsty, drink something, you'll be fine. The one group we've talked a little about, it's not as applicable, is older adults may get a lessened sense of thirst. And so there are very, you know, I would say in their 70s, 80s and up, cannot be as thirsty and can suffer some mild dehydration and not even realize that they're dehydrated. So they want to be more conscious of drinking even if they're not thirsty.
Yeah. Well, and drinking in the evening if you're an older adult means that you may be getting up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom more often too. So that probably is another reason why older adults don't drink as much.
Yeah, and that, you know, that's a real concern. So it's just kind of balancing. Can you maybe drink more of your water during the day, you know, before dinner, a little bit with dinner, versus trying to catch up later in the evening. And then, yeah, as you mentioned, having to wake up so often in the night.
So I'm thinking about Darren's comment about eating before bed, but how is getting the right amount of sleep related to better digestion?
Well, getting more sleep is related to being healthier overall and also having a healthier weight. I don't research in that area. I'm not sure what the mechanism is. But generally, people who are healthier have better sleep more, but also have good sleep patterns. So keeping a regular time of going to bed and getting up. There's a lot of information out there about turning screens off, that those screens don't let us sleep as well if we're looking at them right before bed or even leaving them on, you know, like a TV when we go to sleep. But I think the other thing that happens is when people are up later and they're watching TV is they do tend to eat a little more. And then you are laying down, so your digestion just isn't moving along as quickly as it normally would, and you might get that heartburn and be doing a lot of digesting while you're sleeping. So that may not be as helpful for you while you're sleeping as it would be to do it during the day when you're a little more active and moving around and your blood's flowing well.
I do a lot of reading, and you're not a sleep professional here, but it seems like I do, I have to read a lot for the show, for example. We have like 4 books in this last week. So there's a lot of reading that goes on when I go to bed instead of watching TV. And I find if I don't have a book to read, I have a harder time going to sleep.
Yeah, well, I'm not a sleep expert, but I think, you know, what can help hurt people's sleep is they're worried about things, or they're thinking about the next day or work. And so techniques like reading a book, especially if it's, you know, maybe not work-related and you can just enjoy it, or something, you know, that you're interested in learning about. And that's also, I think, why meditation to go to sleep, which is something I use, is very popular, because it really focuses on you focusing on relaxing and putting away the thoughts for the day or for the next day, which will all be there when you get up in the morning, so you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, meditation, that's something I've thought about, and I think I need some training if I'm going to do it.
It's not too hard. I think there's, you know, good center here on campus. We have the Mindfulness Center, and there's lots of things online you can look at, and apps you can buy, and I know a lot of people who use it even during the day for a short break to de-stress.
Grant emailed to ask your view on what type of healthier sweeteners can be used in place of ordinary white, golden, or brown sugars.
Well, it depends on what food you're talking about, too. So, you know, many of the artificial sweeteners are, they call them high intensity. So you just need a tiny little amount, and then they're very sweet. Well, you can imagine if you're baking your holiday cookies and you take out the cup of sugar and put in a drop of artificial sweetener, that cookie's just not going to come out very well. So there are different artificial sweeteners for different purposes. So I think you need to look at that. Some's just personal preference. Some people feel they're sensitive to one, so they might switch to another. I think they're all approved as safe. And if you're careful in not overusing, you know, relying on them so heavily, really none of them are better or worse than any of the others, except for, you know, personal preference and then how they function in the foods you want to enjoy.
Yeah, for sure. Well, New Year's, I'm wondering why, and I used to do this, I don't do it anymore, but why do so many New Year's resolutions involve food?
I don't know why either. I looked it up recently, and someone had done a big survey, and it was something like 45% of all people were making a New Year's resolution, so a lot of resolutions, period. And the top 5 or 6, and many in the top 10 resolutions people said they were making, were about health. Not just nutrition, general healthy eating, but also things like exercising and stress reduction, things that, you know, we often recognize that people want to kick in terms of habits like smoking. So it just seems to be a very common time where people are thinking it's a new year. There's something about the words even, new year, turning over a new leaf, that spurs people to think about it.
Yeah. So what about setting goals then? Would you do it? What's your advice for setting goals around food?
I think if there's something you want to achieve, it's a great idea. I work with Cooperative Extension a lot. They teach something called SMART goals. People can look that up. I won't go through the acronym. But it's really selecting goals that are realistic, smaller, maybe to work towards a bigger goal. And a big part of it is to make sure that you set some boundaries or time on it. So as you can imagine, if you say, you know, after the New Year's, I'm going to exercise more. That's pretty big, not specific. There's not a lot of accountability to say, you know, in the middle of January, are you exercising more? It might be better if you wanted to do something like that. And say you're not active at all. Say, for the next week, 3 nights in the week, I'm going to walk for 15 minutes around the block. That gives you a short-term goal, something that's probably pretty achievable, depending on our season, January weather. So you can get to the end of the week and say, I did it. I feel good. Okay, in the next week, I'm going to do 4 days. And then as you work towards a bigger goal, you have successes that you can look at. Another thing to do is to put a little accountability on it. Tell someone you're going to do it. Tell your partner. Write it down. Look at it. when you aren't accountable, it's just in your head, it's a little easier to let it slip because there's no one really paying attention. So tell your spouse, your kids, somebody, you know, I really want to do this. You hold me accountable. Now, nobody wants to be nagged, but at least there's somebody that knows you're trying.
Well, I use, and I'm looking around here, I use Map My Run.
Yes.
Which is an app, and I've talked about it on the show in the past before, but there's a goal of that you have for the year, and then it keeps track of your you enter when you start and quit when you finish, and and the goal for the year is 1,050 kilometers for the year, something like that, or 1,020, I forget what it is, maybe it's 1,020. Anyway, I've surpassed that goal a while back, but I can look at the app and see that I am in the top 12% of the several hundred thousand people who are doing it. So it kind of makes me feel good.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think, you know, we think back to when we were little and you got a little trophy for being in a sport or something. But, you know, it means something to people to get a little pat on the back, whether it's in an app or, you know, from a buddy that's walking with you. And I've done something similar with cycling, where at the end of the year they say you've done this many miles. And, you know, you can look back and say, you know, all that effort was worth it. I really accomplished something. I'll keep going.
Well, I'm at 1,148.56 kilometers.
That's great. Yeah, I believe you're in the top amount then, doing that much.
But I get up every morning at 20 to 6 or so and go out for 2-3 miles.
Yeah, and see, that's, you know, that's a good amount, but it's a routine you've set up, so it becomes a habit. The other reason that people sometimes don't go through on their resolutions is they don't really create a new habit, or maybe they don't break an old habit. If you think of how many people a few weeks in have already stopped, you need to go for a while, you know, get some encouragement, set some small goals until it finally begins. Probably you just wake up and you don't think, oh, do I want to walk today? You just think, oh, I'm up, time to walk, because now it's a habit.
And I tell you, if I get sick or something where I don't do it for, it's almost hard to get back into it sometimes. If you're down a week, I hate not to be doing it, because I know if I'm a week goes by and I haven't done it usually for good reason.
Mm-hmm.
I've that first time back out is just hard to get up and get going again. But once I do it, then you feel good.
Yeah, and we're birds of a feather. I'm exactly the same. So sometimes people will say, well, you know, do you need to exercise almost every day or every day? And maybe I don't as much for my health, but I am the same way. If I don't do it one day and then not the next, pretty soon, well, I can do it tomorrow. I slip away from the habit. So yeah. Knowing that, even the days I don't want to do it, I do it.
Well, you know, that brings me to diets, because I know diets are, you know, part of often New Year's resolutions. But there are a lot of, every year, I think there's a new fad diet pops up, one or more. In general, what are some red flags for unhealthy diets?
Yes, and I become more conscious, too, of how we speak. So we often will talk about a healthy diet, but people think the word diet means just weight loss. So we've started to talk a little bit more about eating patterns, a healthy eating pattern. So there is, you know, healthy eating patterns, which you could use if you cut the calories in them to lose weight, but they don't have to be. In terms of kind of the fad diets for weight loss, many of which aren't new, they just kind of circle
with
around.
With a new name.
Yeah, with a new name, and it looks like something we saw a few years ago. I think red flags are cutting out entire categories of foods. So saying, you know, you can't have all these fruits or vegetables, you can't have all these things. I think ones that really restrict your eating to a very small window, one would have to be really careful. So some of the fasting diets that are very, very restrictive. And I think probably even with a good diet, if you're wanting to change how you eat for whatever reason, and it's not something that you think you can do forever, it's going to be tough. Because at some point, you'll start to slip back to a way that you used to eat, and then you might not get the improvements. So as you're looking at them, think, okay, I'm looking at this fad diet. Can I eat this for the rest of my life? If not, how am I going to get there to a way that I can eat for the rest of my life and feel good?
And if you, say I want to lose 35 pounds or 40 pounds and you get there and you follow it religiously till you get there, isn't it often the case that people go back then to put that weight back on?
Yeah, that's when these diets are followed long term. That's unfortunately what we often see, is people regain that lost weight because they do move back into the patterns that they had before. There are some people that have looked at people who have kept weight off that have lost a lot and kept it for a long time. And in general, what they found with those people is they eat breakfast. They eat a high fiber, low fat diet. They tend in the beginning to just be more cognizant of their weight. So they don't just lose some weight and then forget about it. They're thinking a little bit more about their weight and, having healthy eating patterns. They tend to exercise an hour or so a day. And this is another one. Over time, some of those people report they're not thinking about it as much because some of the things they're doing are now habit. So they're not thinking, I've got to watch everything I eat. I've got to exercise all this much. They've just developed a new healthy pattern that helps them keep that weight off.
So if you're looking at, how did you use the term, is place of diet, eating?
Eating pattern.
So an eating pattern, would the Mediterranean eating pattern be among the best or better?
That's a really, that's a very nice pattern, very healthy. It allows for some flexibility. There's many types of Mediterranean diets. So if you take a look online, you'll see different variations. What people do in Greece might be a little different than what they do in France or here. But in general, that's one that the U.S. Dietary Guidelines, who does dietary guidance for the nation, has recommended as a pattern that people could select and try to stay with that would be very healthy. Has a lot of, it uses olive oil. It uses a lot of whole foods. Fruits and vegetables, whole grains. It's more careful with eating a lot of meat. So it adds fish that some people don't eat. So it has a lot of excellent qualities.
So are you going to make any resolutions this year?
I usually try to make at least one because there's always some area in my life I'm thinking I need to improve, but I haven't picked one yet. So maybe you can ask me in maybe late January if I made it and kept it.
Beth, thanks a lot. Appreciate your time and appreciate you being with us, and we'll look forward to another visit. Thank you, Beth.
Thank you.
Beth Olson, our guest she's a associate professor and extension specialist in the Department of Nutritional Sciences at UW-Madison. Coming up tomorrow on the show, when was the last time you saw a roadkill? We'll learn about road ecology tomorrow and how our roads are shaping the lives of our wild animals. Plus, we hear about a program helping young people get into dairy farming. That's tomorrow starting at 11. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.